This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Otto Hoffman, and here we are once again. It is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Your questions come to us via email. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions related to health, nutrition, vitamins, supplements, anything that pertains to intelligent medicine. And with me is Layla Mudin. We work together on a daily basis at our practice here in Manhattan. And she's a registered dietitian, also possesses a master's degree in the field of nutrition with how many years of experience, you would say?
Since 2003.
2003 with experience in the Atkins Center, which I think is one of the more interesting place crucibles for nutritional thought. You kind of gravitated towards interesting places in your career. And, with the demise of Dr. Atkins when he passed away, you moved on to work with me. At any rate, before we take questions, an interesting story caught my eye. There was a little blip in the stock market last week. The shares plummeted, and it was thought that part of it was in fears over inflation. They're going to appoint a new head of the Fed. Janet Yellen is departing, so the concerns about how the Fed was going to handle that with interest rates, but also what was leading the race to the bottom in terms of the stocks was the healthcare sector. The healthcare sector, the bottom dropped out of healthcare stocks like United Healthcare. And so, you said, what's going on with that? Why did that happen? Well, the headline last week was Amazon, Berkshire Hathaway, and JP Morgan Health Initiative send industry shares plummeting. The three influential companies plan a new initiative aimed at improving employees' health care. So you would think that with a new initiative aimed at improving employees' health care, that would not scare the healthcare industry.
That
would be like a good thing.
Sure.
But no, but I think that they're saying is that maybe they want to make it cheaper and more efficient. And, so I guess the concern was
that competition for the insurance companies.
Exactly. I find that kind of amusing is that, efforts to streamline, the healthcare system by innovators, disruptive, companies and disruptive technologies, causes everyone to head for the hills and, unload their healthcare stock. So it's kind of funny. Other story that caught my eye was this one that has to do with vitamin D. Vitamin D3 could help heal or prevent cardiovascular damage. A new study shows that vitamin D3 could help restore damage to the cardiovascular system caused by diseases like hypertension and diabetes. Research at Ohio State University suggests that a little more sunlight might help restore damage to your cardiovascular system. I guess they haven't heard of these things called vitamin D3 capsules.
Right. But hard to get sunlight here in the Northeast in February.
Yeah. It says a major discovery from these studies is that vitamin D3 is a potent stimulator of nitric oxide, which is a signaling molecule in the regulation of blood flow and the prevention of clots, as well as prevention of hypertension. So there we go.
So there's an additional way by stimulating nitric oxide, because we also know that sunlight, not necessarily the vitamin D itself, a warm summer day can help to reduce cortisol.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And by different mechanism, just the impact of sunlight on the skin, not necessarily vitamin D, but all good reasons to be in the sun, but hard to do in February when we're, you know, all bundled up and so forth. So
even a dose of nature.
Even a dose of, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we can't get vitamin D from our food. You know, your shiitake mushrooms have to be ripened in sunlight. You'd have to eat a whole lot of them. That and a couple of pounds of wild Alaskan salmon every day.
10 glasses of fortified milk will give you 1,000 international units.
That's ridiculous.
10 glasses of milk.
Yeah, 10 glasses.
I think I would just turn into a blob of mucus if I did that.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So, anyway. Those are some of the stories in the news this week, and we'll cover them in greater depth, probably on my weekend program. And so what are some of the questions this week?
We've got an email from Molly. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I listen to your podcast regularly and have been a fan of Dr. Hoffman since the 1990s.
Oh, goodness.
Recently, I heard a caller asking about UTIs, urinary tract infections, and Cipro, and the related Achilles tendon ruptures that might happen as a result of taking the drug. 15 or so years ago, I took Cipro several times a year for 3 to 4 years for UTI. Mm-hmm. I have tennis elbow in each arm, ankle and wrist pain, torn cartilage, my knee and my hips, but I've always been active in sports. So I know that overuse injuries would naturally be a factor. How long might people expect to have these tendon problems after taking a fluoroquinolone?
Well, that is an open question.
Yeah.
And it is known that individuals who take especially Cipro have a many times higher risk of Achilles tendon rupture. And it's characteristic of those types of drugs, the fluoroquinolones, which include Levaquin and Cipro. Those are the most commonly prescribed, and a couple of others, that they may attack the musculoskeletal system in some way. They're poisonous in some ways to mammalian cells as well as to bacterial cells. So they really kill bacterial cells, but it's a little bit of damage that occurs, especially to musculoskeletal cells. So it appears that you know, I just reviewed that before this this podcast, because I thought I'd look it up and be a little more authoritative than just off the top of my head. So I can't claim to have memorized these facts, but studies show that individuals who are older and individuals who have pre-existing injuries are a little more prone to problems with these antibiotics. And there may be a genetic component as well. Certain genetic types may predispose to that. And what they say here is that once you've had the damage from the antibiotic, that because you're older, I mean, older people have less of an ability to recover from injuries anyway.
Yes.
We just do. I mean, it's just the repair capacity of the body diminishes.
Sure.
And you have less muscular reserve, perhaps, that it's going to be worse. And, you know, given that they're many exposures to the medication, there could have been a continuous erosive effect on the muscles, causing, and tendons, which are related structures, causing these problems that this woman is experiencing.
Yeah.
However, there is no blood test that will tell you that it is precisely fluoroquinolone syndrome versus age-related wear and tear or chronic athletic injuries. So it just, it's hard to distinguish. And it may be a mixed bag in this person's case.
Wow.
So I'm pretty sure that no one has answered the question, how long does it take to recover? And it may be, unfortunately, that once you have the damage, that you can only recover partially. And that there may be some permanent deficits that you have, or chronic injury or inflammation.
Walking with a cane, as I remember. Some of our patients who have had fluoroquinolone.
The term is they've been floxed.
Floxed.
And there's actually a worse aspect of this, which is that there are some neurological aspects to this. And some people have terrible neuropathy, and they have terrible brain fog, and they're debilitated. They really are debilitated.
Yeah. Wow. You know, it's interesting about you. When I was reading this, that Molly, several times a year, took Cipro for 3 to 4 years. Wow, that returning UTI. We're seeing more of this. It's more prevalent. And they're linking it to
antibiotics,
Big Chicken.
Big Chicken. Antibiotics in, we did an interview with the author of the book Big Chicken, and it's thought that antibiotics that are given to animals for growth purposes may colonize, not so much colonize, but they may damage the microbiome or the gastrointestinal tract. They may give rise to antibiotic-resistant E. coli. E. coli lives in our gastrointestinal tract. That E. coli travels down the gastrointestinal tract, and there's a very, very small amount of geography that separates the gastrointestinal tract from the genital tract, especially in women.
Same ballpark.
So, second base and shortstop, using that same analogy. I got baseball on the mind because it's pitchers and catchers coming up soon, and I'm going to start watching the Yankees.
It's more prevalent.
Plausible scenario for that.
All the more reason to get antibiotic-free chicken, organic, which is going to be... Now, organic means antibiotic-free. They don't use hormones in chicken. So anything you're seeing on a package of chicken that says hormone-free, hormones are not generally used in chicken the way they are in beef, factory farms, cattle.
It's like fat-free pasta.
This meat is gluten-free.
Right. Okay.
This food. Okay. Anyway, so... being organic, however, the chickens are still fed corn and soy, much of which is genetically modified, and that may have its own harms to the microbiome.
Right.
If we're eating what the animal itself ate, as you say quite often. So there are lots of things to look at here. It's hard to find pasture-raised chicken. You have to get not free-range. That only means the door was open. The chicken didn't necessarily go out, but pasture-raised is what we really have to find. So you may do better with your local farmer.
Okay. Okay, what's our next question, please?
We've got an email from Johnny. I've been using supplements from Dr. Hoffman for years to treat my diabetes and high blood pressure. My girlfriend, who is 56, recently started having pain in her hands, and her doctor told her that it's arthritis. Well, what supplements would you recommend?
That and $250 will get you a consultation. You know, say you got a diagnosis.
Exactly.
I get pain in my hands, and the doctor rendered a diagnosis of arthritis.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So, what are there any supplements that you might recommend?
Okay. Well, it sounds like the doctor was saying you have arthritis, but you don't have rheumatoid arthritis. Yeah. So the presumption is that this person's girlfriend has a form of osteoarthritis. So what are some of the plausible supplements for that?
Lots of fish oil.
Sure.
If you're already taking fish oil, you need to at least double it. Glucosamine, chondroitin are helpful.
Yep.
We also like boswellia, curcumin.
Sure. We also might use undenatured collagen type 2.
Yes.
Or UC2. Right.
UC2.
Which is usually taken at bedtime away from other things. And, there's also the Dr. Kaufman protocol from the 1950s using high dose niacinamide or vitamin B3. But particularly that's been shown to be helpful for knee arthritis. So that would entail, 1200, 1500 milligrams of niacinamide, not niacin, because niacin's the flushing kind that can affect liver function.
Yeah, liver function would have to be watched. I would also eliminate, I would recommend, Johnny, that you tell your girlfriend to eliminate the nightshades at the very least, if it's osteoarthritis.
And perhaps get an overall anti-inflammatory diet.
Exactly.
Which
anti-inflammatory diets are quite popular.
Right.
At this point, our food is so tainted.
So what we want is less refined food, less sugar. More fresh fruits and vegetables.
Less vegetable oils, or ban artificial sweeteners of any kind. Try to eat as much clean produce as you can. But eliminating the nightshades, tomatoes, white potatoes, all peppers, including paprika and cayenne pepper. Sorry, spicy food lovers. Eggplant.
And just some other things like that. Vitamin D certainly plays a role in rheumatoid arthritis, probably also in osteoarthritis. There's some benefits to SAMI for some sufferers of pain.
Yes, yep. Joint pain. Sammy yep. for joint pain. Mm-hmm. That's right. You get a little side benefit too, a little lift in your mood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, ultimately, mm-hmm. I got to say, when we're talking pain, mm-hmm. you know, we can't talk about pain without mentioning CBD or cannabidiol.
Right. Very popular lately.
Which can be obtained, you know, in states where it's legal through marijuana dispensaries, but also there are online purveyors of CBD oil, mm-hmm. which you can try. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, for anxiety, for pain, for headaches,
yeah.
for fibromyalgia, mm-hmm. This might be beneficial.
Wow.
Insomnia. Mm-hmm. Many of our patients report benefits with CBD oil, and it doesn't get you stoned. It may just mildly relax you, won't make you tired or unable to drive.
Yeah, yeah. Still wouldn't operate heavy machinery, probably. Right.
I just, and I saw, I've got to look into this further. There's an Israeli company that's putting out a topical version of CBD oil that may be helpful for people who have athletic injuries and minor aches and pains.
Oh,
and
like an Asper cream or a Tiger
yeah,
Balm
yeah,
or
that might
Icy Hot.
Penetrate sufficiently into the joint to provide some relief.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Toprosin. I remember
Toprosin. Well, Toprosin was, it's, but it doesn't have CBD
yeah.
in it, but it's,
right.
there's, that was, for a while they were our sponsors, and they, you know, I sometimes use Toprosin for athletic injuries, aches mm-hmm. and pains. Mm-hmm.
There are certain herbs, back in the day, and it's interesting because they're both a claw. Cat's claw was very popular mm-hmm. for arthritis, maybe some 10, 15 years ago, mm-hmm. and now lately devil's claw.
Devil's claw, it, more specifically, I find it more helpful in gout.
Oh.
I don't know that it's that helpful in osteoarthritis.
Mm-hmm. All right. Johnny, we wish your girlfriend luck. Thank you very much
and
for your
question. And by the way, the encouraging thing is that many patients come to us with that, and mm-hmm. we treat them, and they come back pain-free, you know,
yeah.
after it may take 3, 6, 12 months, but their aches and pains are diminished with diet and supplements.
Yes, yes, in a very big way. All right. We have an email from Karen. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, what is the best diet to follow if you have coronary artery plaque? Specifics about what to eat, what not to eat would be much appreciated. I know you're supposed to avoid simple carbs, trans fats, but are cheese and coconut oil really okay? For the most part, I would say yes. Again, an anti-inflammatory diet is in order here.
Mm-hmm.
Anything causing inflammation in your body, and especially if you have any food allergies, it's best to avoid those as well. Stay far away from vegetable oils. They are not healthy, and they are rancid mm-hmm. quick. Even your roasted nuts, they don't last forever in the candy dish.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be stored in the refrigerator, the freezer. You want to roast them yourself.
I did that. You know, I do that. And yesterday I got a grass-fed meat delivery.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, oh, I only have so much room in the refrigerator. It's all full of these nuts that I freeze
because
I want to keep them really fresh. So I had to take the nuts out. Now I got to eat the nuts really quickly because I don't want them to go rancid.
Right.
So
right.
It was, you know, Manhattan apartment. I said, oh, boy, I wish I had a freezer in my garage,
yeah.
you know, for all this grass-fed meat.
Because
uh-huh. it was displacing the nuts that I keep, like you,
sure.
I keep it in the freezer sometimes.
If you keep it in the fridge, that yeah. could be good enough for a good period
yeah.
of time.
I think
it's still better than that. Reduce taking, fish oil, I would say to Karen, fish oil, chiolic, and the optimal dose
is twice a day. Two twice a day of
for
cardio
coronary.
Formula, yeah.
Yes, the cardio formula.
I think
chiolic.
It's 1200 milligrams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certainly there's evidence for many things. Resveratrol and olive leaf extract we
yes.
love for cardiovascular prevention,
mm-hmm.
As well as, you know, working on other risk factors like homocysteine with B vitamins.
Yes, if homocysteine is high, that's an independent reason for plaque mm-hmm. in the arteries. So that...
vitamin D, as for what I just said in the beginning
right.
of this podcast, vitamin K2, you know,
mm-hmm.
there's
vitamin
a whole...
K2.
Variety of things.
I wouldn't recommend any additional calcium other than what's in your multi.
Certainly magnesium is preventive.
I was just making it a point today. We saw somebody today who lifetime chronic constipation.
Yes.
And she was taking a calcium supplement. I said, did you know that this may be turning your stool into
concrete? I'm glad
concrete?
You picked up on that. Yeah, because, yeah. Right, yeah.
So we talked about all these other things.
It's a cheap calcium supplement. It's not even...
Cheap calcium supplement. She was eating a whole lot of hard cheese.
Okay.
And ice cream and chocolate. And I said, all of these are going to bind you.
Yeah,
you don't necessarily want to eat all of these. So we went into quite a bit of detail. But anybody taking additional calcium who has coronary artery plaque should probably... not take as much or take enough K.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that so many formulations now with any calcium are including magnesium, vitamin D, vitamin K. It really needs to be all of those.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is low on a blood test of calcium, mm-hmm. on a metabolic panel.
Right.
Everybody's well within the range of normal.
You know,
but a lot of people are low in D and magnesium. These are the important things.
And we also kind of, when we see someone who has coronary artery disease, mm-hmm. we ask the question, how did you get there? And there are a variety of pathways for getting there. One is through insulin resistance.
Yes.
And that's an important pathway to look at.
Mm-hmm. Because that is the marker of inflammation, a high insulin level, high fasting, or whether during a glucose tolerance test. Remember glucose tolerance test, Dr. Hoffman?
Yes, yes.
So a high insulin will actually also drive up hemodynamically your blood pressure. Because it causes changes in your cardiovascular system to increase your blood pressure.
Drives inflammation. It promotes cholesterol synthesis.
Yes.
Triglyceride formation. You know.
Smaller, denser LDL, atherogenic LDL.
So
all of that.
We can shorthand it and say, oh, the person's got a cardiovascular disease. Okay, boom, take this, this, and this. Or we can go to the origins of it and say, well, what is your pathway to cardiovascular disease? Why are you getting it? Mm-hmm. And in fact, I did an entire lecture, and I was accompanied by another physician. So we went for an hour. Each of us took a half an hour to describe microbiome-related issues.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see that summarized in an article that I put out last week about the relationship between the microbiome and heart health, and that there are influences from our gut that make an impact on our cardiovascular risk.
Yeah. Our gut microbes determine how well we absorb our nutrition or not, and any byproducts that are put out by those. We are a host. We are a superorganism. It's still fascinating. More cells of those bacteria than there are cells in our body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wrap your mind around that concept. It's just wild. So there's a whole lot of things to look at.
Or, you know, one way to look at it is we're very sophisticated vehicles for these bacteria. Mm. You know, it's like we're like super...
We are their home.
We are Lincoln Navigator, you know, super luxury cars for them that they can, travel through space and time with.
Mm-hmm.
And we feed them and we nourish them and we, interact with them.
Right. Okay. Karen, thank you for your question. Ah, this is an email from Mark. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I'm a 72-year-old male in good health. I maintain a diet of very low carbs, which keeps me in low-level ketosis. I was recently diagnosed with diverticulitis that was confirmed by a CT scan. My doctor put me on a course of antibiotics, and things have since resolved. Are there integrative treatments for diverticulitis that can be used in conjunction with or in lieu of this conventional approach? What can I do to minimize my chances of a future recurrence?
Well, what we're going to do with that question is we're going to pause because we do that, we divide these podcasts into two parts. And when we return, we're going to answer this gentleman's question about natural therapies for diverticulitis.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mudin, and it's our weekly Q&A with Layla as part of Intelligent Medicine Podcast Series. We'll be right back.